The title of the sermon is, We Were Not Meant to Be Perfect, We Were Meant to Be Whole. And while I think we would probably all agree with this statement, I'd like to take this time to share with you how I came to think about this and how I think it really can influence all of us in our daily lives. On one of my multitude of long treks to Columbus, Ohio, I flipped the radio to XM, and I'm, again, listening to Oprah Radio, you know, because I like to listen to talk sometimes when I'm in the car. Sometimes the music just lulls me, and that's not so good when you're driving 6 or 7 hours. So on this particular day, I was listening to Oprah Radio, and her master class was on, as she calls it. It highlights people who are doing the hard work of making sense of their lives, and she believes that these people are important role models for us. There are many people that she has in the program whom I love to listen to. Deepak Chopra comes to mind, but there are others like Joel Osteen or Tony Robbins who's just rubbed me the wrong way, and I try hard to listen to find a glimpse of what I can gain from those shows in particular, while working hard not to judge and to set aside the things I'm not so fond of. And I try to practice what I preach, and so I recalled my sermon from a couple of years ago on the GPS, and I'm whispering in my head, recalculating, so I'm not allowing myself to get caught up in some of the things that I'm not owning and I don't agree with. But I'm trying not to judge their journey. Their path is theirs, mine is mine, and that's true UU fashion, at least as I'm trying to practice that. But there are nuggets in there that I absolutely can take away, and I think at the heart of both Osteen and Robbins, I see a desire to empower people to love themselves, and I think that's really important, and that's a message I can hold on to, even if the path they take to get to that place is not something I necessarily agree with. But let me take you back to the person that they highlighted on the show. This show in particular was highlighting Jane Fonda. And now we all have our memories of who Jane Fonda is and what she stands for. I know she's a Atlanta Braves fan, which makes Lane very happy. She's an exercise guru, which is sort of how I started to get to know her. And she was a controversial figure during the Vietnam War. But the show really delved into her past and tried to explain who she was and even tried to explore why she was the person that she was today. And some of you might be just saying, as I did, Jane Fonda, spiritual role model. But it was eye-opening, so I figured I went with it. On the show, Jane shared her journey. Her mother had committed suicide when Jane was about 14 because her mother had been a victim of rape. Jane herself had low self-esteem and an eating disorder, and she had a father who was emotionally distant, and she grew up invisible in her house, or so she felt. She was a tomboy and athletic, and she didn't really feel like she fit into school either. It finally took her until she divorced Ted Turner, probably about 10 years ago, that she finally found herself, finally found her essence, her core, and dare I say, her soul. And as she shared her story, I could feel this energetic connection to her words, and it felt really familiar and very true, certainly from my own personal experiences in life, that we were not meant to be perfect. We were meant to be whole. And she found her wholeness in the last third of her life, which is a good reminder, is never too late to try to find your center and your true place of authenticity. You can feel her bliss as she was talking. You can feel her centeredness and, you know, as she spoke more and more. And it was really, truly an authentic experience, and it really touched me. Now, I've been doing a lot of research of late on the topic of authenticity. I have a paper under review with some colleagues right now looking at how someone with a concealable stigmatized identity, somebody who's gay or lesbian or who has a hidden disease or an illness, can feel more authentic and ultimately have a positive impact on the people that they lead in the organization. I'm not going to geek out and get into the nuances here, but authenticity is really at the core of the model. And given I was heading out to Columbus at the time to work on that research with my girlfriend on the topic of authenticity, this notion of we were meant to be whole really, really resonated with me. It was like this. Everything was converging, you know, in this trip for some reason. So I sat with it and I started to think about how connected that would connect with some of my own views of spirituality and my life path through Buddhism and yoga and Unitarian Universalism. You know, what does it mean to be whole? And why does the pursuit of perfection move us away from the path to wholeness? The funny thing is, on my way back to Glen Carbon on that very same trip, I had Oprah Radio on again, and this time it was Soul Sunday. Like, okay. And then it was Then it started to all come together for me. I had read Gary Zukav's Seed of the Soul a few years ago after listening to him speak on the radio. And I found it really eye-opening about how he likens the soul to our very essence as a human. Now, for me, as a former Catholic, I had a very different idea of what a soul was or should even look like. And I have this memory of my parents' Bible as it was sitting on the coffee table in the living room, and I would open it up and I'd have these images in it. And every image of the soul was sort of like this loaf of bread or like this hollowed out white chest with wings on it. And that was supposed to exemplify what a soul was. And then anytime you saw it, you know, if it was being lifted up to heaven or if it was in purgatory or hell or wherever, the soul was ascending or descending wherever it needed to be. And I was like, and so anytime I even hear the word soul, no matter what it is, it's the first image that comes to my head. So anyway, I thought that was sort of interesting. But I know now, as, you know, through my own spiritual evolution, that the soul is much, much more than that. But I want to take us through how the soul, that word soul, is used in our lexicon. This is not something that's necessarily related to the world of, you know, spirituality. What happened? Oh, okay. Oh, we've got soul food. Really good stuff. We have soul music. Soul train. And now I can still hear the song in my head. Let me see where I off to you. We have the words soulmate, and here's a couple of things up here about soulmate. Your soulmate is someone who recognizes your divine nature and therefore helps you to recognize it in yourself. The minute, and then and a beautiful poem from Rumi. The minute I heard from my first love, the minute I heard my first love story, I started looking for you, not knowing how blind that was. And lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're in each other all along. So, you know, beautiful words. And we use the word soul all the time, right? Even in modern books and movies, we see Lord Voldemort, whose soul has been split by the Horcruxes. It's a little gory, but we all know it's a fake image. So, and so basically, he divided his soul up, and we realized that it rendered him, you know, so weak with no morals or conscience. So is a soul something that Christians have, something that is holy and pure and deserving of eternal salvation in heaven? Maybe. But there's a famous, and then there's this famous piece of art, which is the upper left-hand corner here, that depicts the lonely soul, and it's a woman, surprise, usually in chains and bound to a place of eternal damnation. So there she is up there. The one in the middle in the piece is also this descent into hell. The person part on the right is addressing sort of rising to heaven or going to hell or what have you. So there's all this imagery around Christianity and Catholicism and things like that about what the soul means. So then the question, of course, comes to me, do atheists have souls? I mean, if Christians have this ownership of the definition of the soul, then of course, since atheists don't believe in a God or eternal salvation in heaven or damnation, then they must be soulless. But of course, I think I know more than my share of amazing atheists whose character I would put up against the moral righteous individual who believes that they have a direct line to God because they thought that they had a soul and atheists didn't. I think atheists have souls. I actually know that atheists have souls. And given that, maybe souls aren't completely linked to this idea of salvation or damnation. Is a soul about how we think and who we are, a very sort of Cartesian, I think, therefore I am? Is our soul really our brain or our body and the brain working together? And I think somehow it goes a little deeper than that. And I like the series of images here. The upper right-hand side, obviously, is about meditation and this idea that the soul and the and your body, you know, kind of work together, and the soul, the essence of you, sort of emanates from that. Over here, life is not a competition. Find the stuff that makes your soul sing and be your own uniquely beautiful self. And that's really one of the pieces I want to hold on to, as well as this next quote by none other than the philosopher Ray Charles, who says, "What is a soul? It's like electricity. We don't really know what it is, but it's a force that can light a room. Is soul our conscious, our conscience, or our center of morality? Not quite, but it's close. I think the soul may be greater than that, even though we will call someone soulless when we are certainly implying that they lack a moral center. When we think about soul music, soul food, what comes to mind for me energetically is something that touches my inner passions. And I want to bring us to the next slide here. These are some other great slides. It really differentiates between the body, the soul, and the spirit. And that's more of a sort of a Christian tradition on the right. But I like this one here because it tied in the three prophets of the human soul, the Greeks, the Jews, and pagans, influencing this idea of what it means to have truth, goodness, and beauty in our soul. So I like all those. When I think about the concept of a soulmate, I think about the person I feel connected to in a fundamental way, unspoken and deep, passionate and transcendent. I think for me, after a lot of deliberation and agreeing, I think with Gary Zukav, our soul is our essence. It is something that is larger than our body or our monkey brain that chatters incessantly. Our soul is that which makes us whole, unique, excellent in our own way, out in our own uniquely beautiful self. When we meditate, we are trying to remove ourselves from the constraints of our body and our chattery mind to seek our deepest essence. And our soul really goes beyond our five senses. So I'm going to continue what Gary was talking about, who followed that the reading. Your soul is that part of you that is immortal. Every person has a soul, but a personality that is limited in its perceptions to the five senses is not aware of its soul and therefore cannot recognize the influence of its soul. As a personality becomes multisensory, its intuitions, its hunches, and subtle feelings become important to it. It senses things about itself, other people, and the situations in which it finds itself that it cannot justify on the basis of the information that its five senses can provide. It comes to recognize intentions and to respond to them rather than to the actions and the words that it encounters. It can recognize, for example, a warm heart beneath a harsh and angry manner, and a cold heart beneath polished and pleasing words. Your soul is not a passive or theoretical entity that occupies a space in the vicinity of your chest cavity. It's that chest cavity thing again coming back. It is a positive and purposeful force at the core of your being. It is that part of you that understands the impersonal nature of the energy dynamics in which you are involved, that loves without restriction and accepts without judgment. Now, it's really interesting. I was at a wedding last night, and we were talking about the sermon today, and I have to say I have pretty awesome and insightful friends, and my friend said that that he had heard the story that if you weigh someone before and after death, that they weigh less after death, some infinitesimal amount of maybe 1/10 of 1 ounce or what have you. And he thought, maybe that's, you know, the soul. You know, as you die, it leaves your body, and that's that sort of infinitesimal difference. And while Zukav would argue probably that it's not, you know, it's not something that's physically constrained, nonetheless, you know, I thought it was sort of interesting. And he thought, you know, I don't know if it's scientifically proven, or maybe it's just the imagination of some sci-fi writer or some ivory tower theoretical physicist out there. But it's but given that life force is leaving us, energy moves us, moves on to another place, maybe there is some minute degree of mass that it holds. I don't know. But it's an interesting idea. Perhaps it's the missing link to the hard question of what makes up human consciousness. So who knows? Zukav goes on then in the book to argue that the goal is to align the personality, as we discussed in the reading today, with the soul, to allow our inner essence to manifest itself through our day-to-day activities in a way that makes us whole and complete and at peace. The wholeness that Jane Fonda speaks of is really about us finding our soul and then allowing it to present itself in a physical manifestation, digging deep within us and finding our truth, our true self, and who we would be if someone hadn't told us who or what we should be. The pursuit of perfection is about our personality driving us to places that is not authentically who we are. It's about trying to control that which we cannot control, leading ultimately to pain and dissatisfaction. When we talk about standing on the side of love, first and foremost, we have to love ourselves. You can't love others if you can't love yourself first. This love of self comes from a deep place within us, acceptance of our flaws, but with an eye towards improving ourselves, not radically, but incrementally. Radical change is hard, and some people are really good at it. And they might decide one day, and this is the day I'm going to, and insert stop drinking, stop smoking, start exercising, whatever it is, and they never pick up another drink, another cigarette, and they exercise every day, religiously. That's not me. And it's really not everyone. There are some people, and I'm grateful for those people, but for most of us, improvement is much more incremental. And we should be gentle with ourselves over that, because the bottom line is, you know, change is not easy. I had a slide up there, but for some reason, my slideshow, I opened up the wrong one, so I'm just going to let it go. But the slide that I was going to show you had this difference between excellence and perfection. And that excellence is about how we can open up ourselves and enrich ourselves, and perfection is about this pursuit of something that's just impossible to reach. I think it's clear that the pursuit of perfection can mask or destroy our soul. The pursuit of excellence is what liberates it. Perfection is an illusion that somehow we are less than good enough. Run fast away from perfection, because perfection is the mind and the personality that are trying to stop you from experiencing who you truly are at your core. It's a heavy anchor that is wrapping itself around your neck, stopping you from reaching your full potential. Shed it today. It won't happen overnight, particularly if perfection has been a way of life for you. It's about having to break a habit, and it's hard to do that. And I chose to honor Yom Kippur today in our responsive reading because it's a day of atonement, a day to ask for forgiveness for all of our wrongdoings. I saw it as a lovely tie-in with the idea of how we can become whole by letting go of old anger and grudges, by judging less, and by giving more. And if we aim for excellence and wholeness, this can help us move on the path away from perfection and more towards a sense of loving kindness to ourselves and to others. And I challenge all of you, as you lay in bed at the end of the day, to sit back and reflect on the wholeness of you. Find the blockages and the barriers, and commit yourself to the pursuit of excellence each day. Open up your true essence that has perhaps been hidden for any number of reasons, both in and out of our control. Find your soul, embrace it, and share it with others. All right, so let's see if I can get the music thing to work here like I want. Our last, yes? Thank you. Thank you, sweetheart. So our last song is As I Am by Summer Osborne, and I should get the tune clicking right now.